And tonight on Coast to Coast, we shall talk about the Knight Templars, Treasurer, Templars, Sanctuaries in North America, an amazing work by William Mann. And we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. William Mann is an officer of the Knights Templar of Canada's Grand Executive Committee, a member of its Grand Council, serves as the Sovereign Great Priorities Grand Archivist. Bill is a registered planner, forester, landscape architect as well. His book, Templar Sanctuaries in North America. Welcome to the program, Bill. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, George. How are you?
Good. I'm great. And you're out in Canada, huh?
That's right.
Whereabouts?
That's right. We're on the outskirts of Toronto.
Ah, great spot. I go to Toronto about every year to do an event at the Queen Elizabeth Theater there.
Yeah.
Great city.
It's very, very nice here today. It's 40 degrees Celsius.
Not bad. Not bad. Tell me a little bit about the Knights Templar. They go way back. Were they once originally a military unit?
They were. They were essentially the assault troops of the Vatican, and they were ruthless warriors and Christian, and essentially they were the initiators and the first armies of the Vatican against the Saracens and the Muslims in Jerusalem. And they were originators, and they continued through all of the Crusades.
William, could you say they were like ISIS is today?
No. I would say, well, maybe on one level they were ruthless in that manner.
Yeah.
But on another level, I believe that the principles that they expounded were more Christian and in actual fact more moral than the basis for ISIS as it is today.
And they were very wealthy, weren't they?
They were very wealthy. Not to start out with. They outwardly proclaimed a level of chastity, celibacy, faith to God, and essentially they gave all of their individual holdings to the church, to the order. But collectively, yes, they were very wealthy, and they developed as the world's first bankers.
Now, are we talking about 1100, 1200 A.D.?
We're talking about the start of the Crusades around 1099 A.D., that's correct.
Wow. How many were there?
Initially starting out, there were supposedly only nine.
Nine?
Nine. And they were some of the youngest sons from the wealthiest families out of France. And their outward mission was to protect the pilgrims that would travel to Jerusalem.
How many did they wind up with?
At one time, I've seen rolls that they wound up with over 100,000 troops.
Oh my
now,
God.
You have to appreciate that for every night, there would probably be a support staff of 10 or 20, and that they would be foot troops. But in terms of knights, there were at least 50,000 at one time spread across Europe.
What came to their demise, Bill?
Well, what came to their demise? Probably their own... vanity. It's very hard to develop a relationship with the church where you are considered above all else, above all armies. You only answer to the Vatican. But really what it said that very much like what's happening today across the world, they possess so much, and both the church and state became so jealous that on Friday the 13th, 1307, the King of France, King Philippe, along with the Pope Clement, conspired to essentially obliterate him.
And that's why Friday the 13th is considered to be unlucky for so many people.
Very much unlucky. Black Friday.
And literally wiped them all out, or did some escape, as we're going to find out?
Well, what we're going to find out is that more than some escaped. The majority of them escaped. It's little known that essentially less than 1% of them were actually caught and persecuted. But what was more important there is that the Supreme Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, sacrificed himself, allowing himself to get caught, and was tortured for essentially 7 years. And during that time, it allowed the order to essentially go underground to escape to places like Portugal, Scotland, Denmark.
Did they have ships too?
They were, in fact, the largest maritime power in the world at the time. They had numerous ships, and their main port was La Rochelle in France. And it's from that port that apparently on the evening of Friday the 13th, that 13 galleys escaped with unlimited wealth and treasure.
Gold, everything, I would guess. Right?
Everything. Essentially, you've seen the, probably a number of your listeners have seen the movie National Treasure.
Yes, with Nicolas Cage, yeah.
And the amount of treasure that they supposedly absconded with was unlimited.
That was supposed to be whose treasure? The king,
well,
right?
It was supposed to be collective treasure over the ages of everybody from the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Phoenicians.
Amazing gold.
Making gold. It was supposedly contained texts. A chemical text from the Library of Alexandria. It was a veritable treasure of all treasures.
How real do you think that movie was?
Well, interesting enough, the movie picked up on a lot of elements. And I always like to say I make a number of presentations across North America on my books. I've been doing this for 20 years. And I make a number of presentations mainly at Masonic Lodges. And I always ask, who's seen the movie National Treasure? A lot of people put up their hand and they say, do you remember the little vignette at the start with a young boy? The story of the family is explained to him by the grandfather in the attic. I'll say, well, that's me. That's taken directly from my first book. In that, when I was 13 years old, actually, I was told and shown the family secret by my grandfather, my great uncle, who I considered to be my grandfather at the time. And he, surprisingly, it turned out, I didn't learn this until about 20 years ago, was the Supreme Grandmaster of Knights Templar Canada in the 50s.
Templar sanctuaries in North America. Tell me about that.
Well, what I've been doing over the last 20 years, based on my background and based on my initiation not only into the Knights Templar Canada, which is the highest Christian Masonic order that you find around the world. And coupled with that, because of my mother's background, I'm a member of the Medicine Society, Grand Medicine Society, the Medewin. I've been able to compare these rituals and ceremonies, and through these rituals and ceremonies provides the basis for my development of a number of premises that the Knights Templar, in actual fact, in 1398, under one Prince Henry St. Clair of Scotland, sailed to Nova Scotia bringing the Templar treasure with them. And from that point on, along with members of what I consider to be the Holy Bloodline, traversed or traveled inland over multi-generational timeline to essentially establish a series of sanctuaries and refugees going east to west across North America, all the while being pursued by the Vatican and the agents of the Vatican, the Jesuits.
How many sanctuaries are there, do you think, in North America?
There were, by my count, there were eight. And eight is a very prominent number, being a number of infinity. You would have to appreciate that the Templars, following Black Friday, virtually felt that they were homeless, they had lost. They were looking to establish a new Jerusalem in North America, the new world.
How were they able to sneak so much wealth and treasure into North America and hide it and then, you know, bury it and put it into the places they put them in?
Absolutely. Well, that's the most interesting thing. And that's the premise and the concept that many people find very difficult to accept. Because of my background, I've been able to demonstrate that there were strategic intermarriages between the Knights Templar, who were not celibate, of course, and the indigenous people in North America, the native North Americans.
Ah, okay.
Strategic intermarriages which allowed them to essentially be guided across North America by members of the larger Algonquin Nation. And if you know the larger Algonquin Nation, it extends all the way from the northeastern seaboard all the way to the foothills of the Rockies. It includes native tribes such as the Mi'kmaq, the Algonquin, the Ojibwe, the Cree, the Cherokee, the Sioux, the Blackfoot.
So many of the Templars then basically got married to, you're saying, had relations with the Native American women in order to create some kind of peace effort because they needed help.
That's right. That's right. And you have to remember that they were not only warriors, but they were monks. Monks in the sense that they were enlightened. And they practiced initiation rites, which allowed them to achieve a higher level here on Earth. And in essence, that it was that basis that they recognized a brotherhood amongst the Native Americans, and they were able to establish a common vein or a common bloodline. So they turned out to be blood brothers, relatives, and their relatives over a number of generations guided them across North America.
We're with William Mann, author of Templar Sanctuaries in North America. And they went all over the country. And at that time, later on, of course, and then I'm going to step back for a second, but did our founding fathers know of them?
I believe the founding fathers did know of them, and because they were high-ranking Masons themselves, most of them. At least, let's say they had an inkling, as did the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was in pursuit of them, has been in pursuit of them for close to 800 years. So there were, through decimation, through attrition, through war, certain facets of the story would be lost and then pieced back together. Not one group had all the secrets, all the entire storyline, but there was enough there to cause people on one hand to be continuing guardians, on the other hand to continuing to pursue these bloodlines across North America.
William, did they got here obviously before Christopher Columbus?
Yes, absolutely. And I always find that hard. I always find that funny. There's a number of people that attack me on the internet just because of that. They still can't believe that there were people here before Christopher.
Well, I know. They don't want to lose that for Christopher.
No, they don't want to lose that for Christopher. But
I think Columbus came here to look for the Knight Templar's treasure.
I believe that he was. But on the other hand, I believe that Columbus was actually a double agent, a Knight Templar himself. He was married into the Sinclair bloodline. His wife was a Drummond Sinclair, and his grandfather, on the other side, I believe, provided him with information which allowed Columbus to realize that, yes, one, there was a new world, but two, know enough to deflect Spain's interest to the south.
I've always heard about Freemasonry and that it's, you know, part of the Illuminati. Can you shed any light on that for us?
You know what? It's interesting what people think. All I can say is that Freemasonry is just a fraternity. I probably know more secrets from a fraternity I belong to in university. But Freemasonry is just a fraternity, a brotherhood of men that come together and through ritual that in many cases they don't even understand or don't even think about. They join together, and the two main principles of Freemasonry is sacred geometry that we now know in high school, and moral allegory, and through that become better men, develop higher morals.
Can you tell us the eight locations that you think the Knights Templar sanctuaries might be?
Well, you can start out with, there's a location that I determined in Nova Scotia, very close to Oak Island.
All right, and, we've heard about that.
There's two brothers currently from Michigan that spent a lot of money digging on Oak Island, believing that the Templar treasure is deposited on Oak Island. And really, I can't tell you the actual locations. You would have to read my books, but through my second book called The Templar Meridians, The Secret Mapping of the New World, I was able to determine that part of the ancient knowledge that the Knights Templar brought over with them was essentially the establishment or rediscovery of ancient grid line, longitudinal and latitudinal grid line. In essence, the Templars, Prince Henry St. Clair and his group, knew exactly where they were going. And this grid line is each longitudinal grid is separated by 8 degrees of separation, which is very prominent in numerology, and established across North America. Unfortunately, a lot of these stone ruins that I've discovered are now disguised or occupied by Indian reserves. So that's the whole notion. People say, why haven't I been able to discover, or anybody been able to discover, the remnants of these sanctuaries? Because they've been absorbed into the native culture.
Those brothers had a television show on called The Curse of Oak Island History Channel, right?
That's right. And what's really kind of interesting is that if they had just backed up and if they were initiates of the higher levels of Freemasonry, they would realize that everything is done on a geometric basis. And in essence, they could have gone through the back door into the tunnel system of Oak Island instead of blowing apart and digging and blasting. There's a moral to the story there. The moral is always look beyond. This whole story has concentrated in an area in south of France called Rennes-le-Château,
right.
And then Rosen Chapel, which is part of the ending to the Da Vinci Code, in Oak Island. All along the way, people don't realize that those were temporary depositories for the treasure. And what they presented now is the basis for the uninitiated, the unenlightened, to not move beyond, not to look beyond. Remember that these Knights Templar were warriors, were military men. They would have constantly been battling a rear front battle, looking over their shoulder, a multi-generational area.
And you found a treasure map, didn't you?
Yes, that's correct. What's really interesting, I refer to it as a treasure map. But in the 1600s, mid-1600s, two Renaissance painters, Nicolas Poussin and David Teniers the Younger, painted two paintings. Nicolas Poussin painted his greatest painting, known as The Shepherds of Arcadia, and David Teniers the Younger painted a painting of St. Anthony and St. Paul. And I've been able to determine that there's an underlying layer to both paintings, pure genius on the part of these two painters, that the underlying pattern actually relates to my Templar meridians, and there's underlying maps of, in the first case, northeastern seaboard of the New World, in the second case, the entire continent. And if you put those two maps together and the two elements, the figures within the maps, they point the way exactly to the final sanctuary of the Knights Templar.
Montana, what can you tell us about that?
Well, Montana, Montaña, in Latin, stands for my refuge. And I've been able to determine that virtually in the painting, X marks the spot, and on land, X marks the spot also. Montana is the home of the Blackfoot. My cousins, the Blackfoot is essentially the tribe that occupies the westernmost area of the larger Algonquin Nation, and at one time had direct relationships with the Algonquin, the Ojibwe, and the Mi'kmaq of the East, and they essentially became the ultimate guardians, absorbed the Knights Templar and the Holy Bloodline into their own refuge and sanctuary in the foothills of the Rockies. And now they remain as the guardian of the treasure.
William, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk more about Templar sanctuaries in North America. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. William Mann, our special guest, Templar sanctuaries in North America. And he said there were eight, but they consolidated them down to one, William. Is that my understanding?
That's correct. It's over a number of years. So we're talking like 400 years that there was a movement of these the various settlements from the east, west, across North America. And all the time, you can correlate it with exploration of various historical figures, ranging from Champlain to Cartier to Hennepin. They were all in pursuit, essentially, of looking to explore the New World, but they were there was an underlying inkling as to what they were looking for, really. And it was remnants, and it was the remaining settlers associated with these Templar sanctuaries.
In your opinion, how much is the treasure worth today, with today's dollars?
In my opinion? Well, people have first of all asked me what the treasure is, and you have to approach it on a number of levels. On the highest level, to me, is the ancient knowledge associated with what was rediscovered on the Templar. But from a monetary point of view, I would say that probably in the range of about $10
billion. $10 billion?
That's correct.
Does somebody have it in their possession, or is it still hidden away somewhere?
It's still hidden away somewhere because you have to think about it. Why is there this frenzy of activity every time somebody writes a book every and it's not just because of the books or the information associated with it or the blasphemy. There's an underlying reason as to why there's a frenzy from the Vatican on down in terms of the Templars and their history and the Templar treasure.
$10 billion. And the kind of treasure, what are we looking at? Much like the movie National Treasure,
much
statues,
like
goblets, all that stuff?
Absolutely. It's essentially a cross-section of ancient history associated with mankind.
Primarily gold?
Primarily gold, because obviously that was the most precious metal. But in my research, I've also discovered that the Knights Templar possessed the knowledge at the time of the greatest steelmaking, alchemical processes, metallurgy, all of those things in terms of rare earth metals, titanium, lithium, rubidium.
Jeez. How about diamonds, rubies? Are they in there too?
You name it, everything. But again, I caution everybody. There may be that physical treasure there, but that's not the real treasure. The real treasure is knowledge of the Knights Templar and what they brought with them.
You take the knowledge, I'll take the treasure.
well, there's again a moral to the story. Look at the two Michigan brothers.
Yeah.
That have been spending millions digging on Oak Island.
And nothing.
And nothing.
Nothing. Maybe nothing. They should be in Montana.
I think that they may should.
Now, is anybody in Montana looking for the treasure?
No, because once again, over 800 years, the whole notion and the opportunity to piece together all the puzzle pieces of the puzzle have been lost for a variety of reasons. And I believe that because of my unique background, my unique family background, I've been able to essentially piece the puzzle back together.
Are there any curses associated with the treasure?
Of course there's curses.
Of course. Give
and
us a few.
And there's booby traps.
Booby traps.
So I caution anybody that's got the shovel and throw it in the back of the trunk and away they go today.
Well, that much treasure, it would have to be in some kind of a cave or tunnel or something, right?
It's in essentially, and it's reflected in Masonic ritual and teachings. It's contained with, in essence, an underground cave, an underground mine, a treasure vault of sorts.
And now what about the curses? What's involved here?
Well, the curses are essentially the Knights Templar over the years, along with the Cistercian monks that accompanied them, laid a number of curses on a variety of people, mainly associated with the church, that you name it, that will happen to you. You'll die a horrible death. But more importantly, there's the Knights Templar possessed all sorts of scientific background. There's a notion that essentially they possess chemical weapons on a scale temporary world than what many of the armies, many of the countries possess today.
It's amazing work that you've done. And how did you accumulate all this?
Well, a lot of friends describe me as the satellite dish that you have on top of your roof that gets about 125 channels at a time. Every so often you have to give it a good kick, though, to realign it. And it's just been my background my entire life since the time that I begin to remember. My great uncle sat me on the couch and recited what I thought was gibberish at the time, but I learned that it was actually ritual associated with the many degrees associated with masonry.
Amazing work, William. It really is.
Thank you very much. But again, the moral to the story is the journey. It's not what lies at the end of the rainbow.
The booby traps. Tell me about them.
Well, the booby traps, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and the whole In Search of the Holy Grail, all of those things are associated with them. The Templars, you have to remember, they possessed a military mind also. They were able to construct on a scale of Leonardo da Vinci, waterworks, water traps, essentially inner mechanisms that we would attribute to the greatest engineering minds of today.
How did they end up here in North America?
Well, they, in essence, discovered or rediscovered information that told them of a new world. And the information, in part, that they rediscovered under the Temple of Solomon, the ruins of the Temple of Solomon, relate to those earlier explorations of pre-Christian mariners, such as the Phoenicians, the Carthaginians, the Egyptians, and the Greeks. Only a fool would, over the centuries, believe that ancient mariners didn't discover the New World and establish trade relationships with the natives.
Are there any heirs alive that know exactly where the treasure might be?
No, I believe I'm probably the only one that's been able to piece together the treasure map.
You're it.
I'm it.
No, and, no relatives alive, nothing.
No.
No heritage?
Well, there's a lot of heritage. As I say, my mother's family married into the lesser French nobility, which is part of the Merovingian line in France. And as I say, through attrition, through war, a portion of the secrets were lost.
Who would own this, William, if they stumbled across it? Do you have to turn it into anybody?
Well, what's really interesting, I find that in any of my research, you always find that there's a number of groups ranging from secret brotherhoods, the Illuminati, to certain governments, to certain royal families that still exist today in Europe that could lay claim to the treasure. But I believe the treasure is, as so aptly put in the movie, really belongs to everybody.
What will it take for people to uncover it, to discover it? An accident?
An accident, but more importantly, a change in the way of their thinking. Set aside the greed for a moment and approach it like the Knights Templar did, in a very military and knowledgeable manner. In essence, reverse the process.
It's difficult for people to set aside the greed, though.
It is, absolutely. And I'm sure that there's somebody listening out there saying, why is he exposing the secret now? Why doesn't he just go dig up the treasure himself? That's not the point to the journey.
You have not been on a journey to go look for it, have you?
Yes, I have.
Have you?
And I've discovered all the signs and seals and tokens that point right to where it is.
In Montana?
Absolutely.
Did you get close to it?
Very close to it. In actual fact, I discovered the back door.
What's it
look like? I'll look for the back door.
What's the back door look like? Is it
the back door?
Yeah.
The back door looks like a cave in the middle of the woods. Never go through the front door. That's where the booby traps.
Why didn't you go in there?
I actually visited the Elder Vault, and to me it was a very solemn and sacred and magnificent place. You have to remember, going right back to the original Knights Templar, they believed that this treasure was, and the relics and the artifacts associated with it, would it be necessary to sanctify a new Jerusalem, the building of a new Jerusalem? And there are groups around the world that would love to get their hands on this, including a number of groups, extreme Orthodox groups in Israel, that realize that they need these artifacts, these relics, to sanctify the rebuilding of the third temple in Jerusalem.
Was it emotional for you when you were out there?
Very much so, because it's a life's journey. And the life's journey really hasn't finished. It was very emotional.
Can you tell me about the holy bloodline of Jesus?
Certainly.
And how does that equate with this?
Well, you've heard me talk about many levels of treasure.
Yes.
One level of treasure is, in fact, the holy bloodline. I believe that Jesus, Mary Magdalene, did marry that Jesus as a prophet, as a man.
Children.
Children. Produced children and from those offspring, from an ancestral lines. These lines came together in the north of France and Normandy, and were the basis of the nine knights, the original nine knights, that rediscovered the treasure.
There could be a family line of Jesus right now, you're saying?
I'm saying there's many family lines of Jesus. By my last calculations, there were at least 500 descendants of the Holy Family that still remain today.
Do they know they are who they are?
No, not at all. I'm sure some of the royal lines in Europe wear that on their sleeve and think that they're very special and unique. But that's the whole thing. I don't think they're special or unique in a different in any way than anybody else in the world is special and unique.
What happened to the Knights Templar in that here in North America, where this just simply died and vanished without anybody knowing about it or the heirs being told about it? You would think with this kind of treasure, William, that family members down through the ages would be told about this.
Yes, I can tell you that through oral legend and myth, amongst the indigenous first people, there are tremendous myths about the coming together of the Knights Templar and the natives. But once again, through attrition, through death over the centuries, a lot of those secrets have been lost.
Just an amazing, amazing research. How long did it take you to do all this?
Well, it's been my life story. It's essentially taken 60 years and continues. But from a research point of view, I wasn't heavily involved in this until I discovered I had no idea about the relationship of my great uncle to Christian masonry until my mother died about 20 years ago.
You could be a Knights Templar.
I am a Knights Templar. A modern day Knights Templar.
A modern one. Absolutely. Are there others like you?
There's a lot of others like me, but again, through attrition, I'm 60 years old, and the average age of the modern Knights Templar is probably 80 or 90. When I started there across Canada, there were 15,000, now we're below 5,000.
Some of the treasure could be yours.
Well, you know what? Again, the moral to the story is it shouldn't really be mine. It should be for everybody. As they say, and this is the most interesting thing that I find, that the modern day movies have picked up on the themes. Well, through their research and through the reading, it's natural to assume that they would, but it picked up on this theme that the treasure belongs to the world per se. The treasure would open up a hidden history, an
yes,
ancient history, to all of mankind. And from that, there are morals, as I talked about, that we should be learning. As we know, society today is in a pretty screwed up way. And maybe learning some of the lessons gained throughout history would help us.
What about the Ark of the Covenant?
Again, on another level, it's been rumored that the Knights Templar rediscovered the Ark of the Covenant. And the candelabra taken by the Romans in 70 A.D. when they desecrated the temple. All of those artifacts may or may not lie within this treasure trove.
What for you, when you put this work together, was the most fascinating aspect of it?
To me, the most fascinating aspect was the Knights Templar priest, that through personal initiation, through personal learning, acceptance, that they were able to achieve a higher level of enlightenment. And to me, that's the, again, one of the main themes to all of this, achieving that sense of enlightenment, where if you look at the two Renaissance painters, Poussin and David Ten Years Younger, their paintings have existed for over 400 years. The treasure map is there in plain sight for those with the eyes to see it. They had the genius to apply a variety of levels of the story, the underlying levels, and to compose a masterpiece on top of that. To me, that was the most fascinating thing.
Would we find incredible technology if we find all this treasure immersed in that?
Absolutely. As I say, people always ask me, what is the treasure? I'll say, what do you think it is? There are so many levels of this treasure that it's mind-boggling.
This is exciting. Why don't you put together a group to go hunting for this?
Well, along with my good friend Scott Walter, who is host of America on Earth on the History Channel, we've been discussing putting together a series to essentially follow the two intrepid warriors bumbling through the woods and to discover this treasure.
And if you find it, what do you do with it?
Well, that's the biggest question. What do you do with it? You probably duck, because they're probably everybody shooting at you.
Oh, my God, they're going to come at you like crazy.
Exactly.
And then how do you extract it?
Well, the whole thing is that I think what you would do is you would get the government involved. And it's on essentially U.S. government land.
It is. So they'll say it's theirs.
They'll say it's theirs.
They'll give you a little fee for it or something.
I really don't want a fee, but I'd like to see an assurance that that treasure is exposed to the public, exposed to mankind, and mankind can decide for themselves what they want to do.
Why didn't they ever use it for their own purposes?
Well, that's there's a little part of that concept that they did use it for their own purposes, not to essentially establish a level of trading. Although they were bankers in a sense, but they considered it a sacred treasure, and they used it to reconcentrate the various settlements, the land upon which they occupied for a number of generations. So they sprinkled the treasure about.
I would guess that prior to that horrible Friday the 13th, a long time ago, the Templars must have gotten word that something was going to happen.
They did, because they possessed the...
They escaped.
They escaped. They possessed the greatest spy network of all time, and they were playing a game of chess, a multi-generational game.
Because there were thousands left, could they not have attacked in France, gone after the king and things like that?
Well, they could, and there are rumors that, in essence, they saw and poisoned the... saw to the poisoning of the king and the pope, and both the king and pope were dead within a year of the killing of Jacques de Molay. And there's your curse.
They did die. Huh.
Right there. But as we know, you can bring on curses by a little vial of poison.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back, William, and take phone calls with you as we talk about your work. Incredible. Templar Sanctuaries in North America.